This is Citizens Council Forum, America's number one public affairs program, where prominent Americans report to the nation on important issues. This week, the series of discussions is presented coast to coast by Citizens Council Forum, a nonprofit educational corporation, with the cooperation of public-spirited broadcasters who share our belief that Americans must be informed to remain free. Now, from Washington, here is the producer of Citizens Council Forum, Dick Morphew.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to Citizens Council Forum. It's indeed a pleasure to have on the program today the distinguished author of the best-selling new book entitled Race and Reason. I'm referring to Mr. Carlton Putnam, author of the well-known Putnam Letters to the President and the Attorney General. Mr. Putnam, a native of New England, graduate of Princeton and a law graduate of Columbia University, founder of Chicago and Southern Airlines, later board chairman of Delta Airlines, distinguished himself in many fields. It's indeed a pleasure to have you on the program today, Mr. Putnam.
It's a pleasure to be here, Dick.
I'd like to ask you, as a result of your Putnam letters, so-called, to the President and the Attorney General, you heard from thousands of people, literally, from all over the country. This inspired you to collect additional information and present that in book form, Race and Reason. This book has been a runaway bestseller in the South, and it's rapidly gaining notoriety and fame in the North. Now, what has been the reaction so far to Race and Reason that you have heard personally?
Well, it's been extremely favorable throughout the South. It's been mixed in the North. I think that sums it up.
The fact that it's getting any reception at all in the North, though, is somewhat of an accomplishment in itself, is it not?
Perhaps. I think that many Northerners, once they're informed on this subject, will be inclined to agree with the South. And I hope that that trend will continue.
In your book, you put on a very scholarly basis the refutation of the equalitarian racial philosophy. Now, how did this philosophy of equalitarianism get started in this country, Mr. Putnam?
The racial equality philosophy goes back, is to my mind simply a facet of the much broader equalitarian ideology, which is characteristic of the entire, what I call, left-wing overdrift of our era. I would say that its roots go back perhaps 50 years. Now, sometimes people ask me, what do you mean by this left-wing overdrift? And perhaps, if you'll permit me, I will explain what I do mean by it.
Please do.
To my mind, the expression left-wing connotes, and I think this is true of most of us, the philosophy which justifies taking the money out of the pocket of the man who earned it and putting it into the pocket of the man who didn't. Now you'll say, may that not sometimes be justified? Actually, of course, if it were done by a private individual, it would be a matter of highway robbery. The government does it, so everything's all right. It's all right up to a point, and it's the point that I'd like to stress just for a second. If you are going to take the money out of the pocket of the man who earned it and put it into the pocket of the man who didn't, you must be awfully sure that you do it to promote social justice and not beyond. If you take this money for the purpose of leveling, it becomes not only, in my judgment, unconstitutional, but certainly immoral. For example, where you go to the point of punitive taxation, where you go to the point of assisting and siding as a government on the side of a labor union, beyond the point where productivity of the union justifies the increase in salaries which the strike brings about. When you go to the point of having relief beneficiaries simply loafing on the relief rolls and you are supporting the improvident at the expense of the provident, there, I say, you have gone over the line where you take the money justifiably and become, really, the government, in a sense, becomes a highwayman in that case. Now, if you were going to promote this kind of a philosophy across the years, if you were one of those who wished to continue to go over this line, what would be the first thing that you would do? The first thing I think that you would do would be to develop a justification. And the justification that you would probably think of first would be, let's assume that we're all equal, that we all should have and even distribution of this world's goods, that we should all be leveled down. And then the next thing that would occur to you would be, we must have some scientific justification for this procedure. Mm-hmm. You would get your scientists together, and you would say, now, gentlemen, those of you who agree with this political view, come up with some scientific justification for it. You would perhaps do what one president of the United States did. He sent certain anthropologists to Africa. Then he said, now go to Africa and come back with equalitarian findings. Two or three anthropologists that I know of went through that experience, and they were quite disgruntled. On their return, they said the findings that they made were quite the contrary. I don't know what they told the president. But you can see how a left-wing movement which drifts over the line more and more will be inclined to press in the direction of proving equalitarianism, proving the equality of individuals, and also, mind you, of races, in order to justify this even distribution of all this world's goods, regardless of whether the foundation is sound scientifically. Now, my study of the matter, my discussions with scientists have convinced me that the truth does not lie on the side of the equalitarian scientific philosophy. My studies have convinced me that this is a deliberately cultivated, politically motivated, misleading and distorting interpretation of racial science.
Well, surely these facts must be known to the faculty members of some of our leading educational institutions, to the scholars and the recognized experts and authorities on this subject. Why haven't they been more vocal in bringing them to the attention of the American people?
Many of them have been. Now, you can take Dr. Garrett, you can take those who signed the Introduction to Race and Reason, for example. Dr. Gates has no superior in the field of human genetics. He has written the definitive book on that subject, and that is the most important field in this matter, human genetics. He has made the flat statement that what I say in Race and Reason is sound. Right. He is supported by Dr. George, he's supported by Dr. Garrett, he's supported by Dr. Gare. We have Dr. McGurk, we have other scientists who have joined in, I cite several of them in my book. They have joined in agreement on this issue, pointing out that why you don't have still more has been due to a very, I would say, sinister suppression of scientific research and scientific declarations in this field, because as I have pointed out in a speech I made, I believe it was in Jackson, I pointed out that one non-equalitarian scientist who made a statement on the on this subject, in on the side of the non-equalitarian point of view, went back to his university and he was told, "We won't fire you. That would be too obvious. But you will never get a raise in pay, and you will never get a promotion."
Well, in other words, the scientific and academic world, to too great an extent, is coming up and whispering in your ear, so to speak, we agree with you and we wish we could say so.
That puts it very well. I have been through that experience now for 3 years.
Well, Mr. Putnam, in the public addresses that you have made very successfully, I might say, very well received in Jackson and in New Orleans, you have said that the South needs to use a new approach in phrasing its arguments and its story to convince the rest of the nation of the correctness of the South's views. Could you give us a very brief recap of that?
Well, I think the South has been restrained and constrained to use the states' rights argument in this fight because it wished to avoid hurting the feelings of the Negro. And there are many estimable Negroes. And I have the utmost sympathy for the Negro, for example, who's got large amounts of white blood. It's a very unfortunate and unhappy state of affairs. But I don't think, to begin with, that it's necessary to be as blunt, nor do I think it's correct to be as blunt, as many today would be in connection with interpreting my point of view. For instance, they say Putnam believes that the Negro race is inferior to the white. I don't put it that way. What I say is that the Negro has certain limitations in regard to vis-a-vis, as the French would say, our white culture. They're not inferior when it comes to their capacity to live according to their own civilization in the Congo. I'm not saying that God regards them as inferior. I'm saying that as far as our white civilization is concerned, they do have certain genetic limitations. Now, that's a tactful way of putting this subject. It cannot be contradicted. I think the South has unfortunately felt that in order to avoid hurting the Negro's feelings, it had to drop the whole subject. And I have consistently taken the position that the South must now recognize that the time has come where kindness of that kind, being imposed upon as it has been, ceases to be a virtue and becomes a vice.
Mr. Putnam, I'd like to thank you very much for this discussion. Our time has gone by all too quickly, and I'll be looking forward to having you again on the program very soon.
Thank you, Dick.
I'd like to take this opportunity to remind the audience that Mr. Putnam's address in Jackson and New Orleans, together with much additional material written by Mr. Putnam and other material concerning race and reason and some of the reasons behind the book and much additional material of interest, is contained in a special edition of The Citizen, the official magazine of the Citizens' Councils of America. Anyone who is interested in reading the full text of Mr. Putnam's scholarly address and this other interesting information may receive a copy of this magazine by sending $1 to Citizens Council, Jackson, Mississippi, and we'll be happy to send you a copy of this magazine. Join us again next week at the same time when we'll be back with another program in your Citizens Council Forum series. Till then, Dick Morphew saying thanks a lot for being with us. So long, everybody.
Citizens Council Forum is dedicated to the preservation of our American tradition of freedom. If you agree that individual liberty and constitutional government must be preserved, if you want to do something positive and worthwhile to help protect our freedom, then we want to hear from you. Just write to Citizens Council, Jackson, Mississippi. We'll be happy to send you, without obligation, literature showing how you can help. Address your card or letter to Citizens Council, Jackson, Mississippi. America's number one public affairs series is presented coast to coast each week by Citizens Council Forum, a nonprofit educational corporation, assisted by a grant from the Mississippi State Sovereignty Commission, an official agency of the state of Mississippi. Join us next week for another informative discussion and remind your friends to tune in. It's time to take a stand. By working together, we can and will safeguard our freedoms.